One of the two major leniencies of Bishulakum is the requirement of nechal kamosh of inner nechal kamosh shulchai. Bishulakum only applies to those foods that are not eaten raw. Things which are eaten raw are not subject to the rules of Bishulakum. The question discussed largely by the Achronim, a couple of references in Rishonim too, but primarily by the Achronim is, what is the yardstick for nechal kamosh shulchai? Does it depend on general custom? Does it depend on your custom? Bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. If everyone eats it raw and you don't like it raw, is there bishulakum? Vice versa. If nobody eats, if most people don't eat it raw, but you do, is it subject to bishulakum? So, in terms of the Achronim, the earliest one to discuss this is Rabbi Yaakov Castro in the Tshuvas Alei Yaakov in the 16th century. He was asked about a person who didn't eat raw cheese. He didn't like raw cheese. So, everyone else, all the rest of the world eats cheese raw. He didn't like raw cheese. He would only eat it after it was cooked. Is it subject to bishulakum? And he says no. He says we follow the general practice that cheese is nechal kamo shuchai. He brings several rayas. He does not discuss the converse case where a person does eat it raw, but nobody else eats it raw. In other words, if he's mekel in the first case because everyone else eats cheese raw, would he also therefore be machmer in the case where everyone else needs it cooked, even if he doesn't? Doesn't say. Some of his arguments would seem to apply equally bein l'chumra bein l'kula. At least one of his arguments, though, seems to be an argument particularly for being mekel. He says, when Chazal made gzeira, we have no right to expand it. If they weren't gozer in the case, it's not nechal kamo shuchai, in the case that it is nechal kamo shuchai, he says, we don't expand the gzeira to include cases because you personally don't eat a kamo shuchai. He's saying a svara which is inherently not a symmetric svara, it's a limiting svara that we don't have the right to extend gzeiras. It's not clear if you would then apply that lechumra and say that we do extend the gzeira if everyone else doesn't eat it raw, but he doesn't discuss that case. I'll call upon him. Half the shaila he discusses, he paskin that even if you don't eat it raw, if everyone else does, you can be mekel. The Pri Chadash is the achron most widely quoted on this question. The Pri Chadash says, bein l'kula, bein l'chumra, we say, bat l'daita esu kol adam, a standard Talmudic rule that we often don't follow individual predilections. We follow the general attitude, and therefore it doesn't matter what you do. We follow the custom of most of the world, Beferish, Bein Lekula, Bein Lechumer. It's interesting, actually, to compare what the Pri Chadash says to what he says in another context in Yeridea. There's a halacha of Baal Teshachtu. You're not allowed, it's a halacha, you're not allowed to eat food that is revolting. Different types of gross and revolting things. There are some examples given in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. Certain types of bugs, which I'll be halacha or mutter, but it's gross to eat them. And other examples in the Gemara. So there's a discussion in the Pri Chadash and Simon Pei Dalet as well as Simon Kuf Tazayin. Does it depend on what you personally find disgusting or does it depend on what people generally find disgusting? So the Pri Chadash seems to make a distinction. He seems to paskin things which are generally or universally considered revolting and you have bizarre standards or bizarrely you're insensitive to this, that is usur, we say, but l'dayta is a kalad. However, If there actually are two types of people in the world, some are simply more squeamish than others. Even he says in one place, even if Rove of the people would find it revolting, he gives the example of the bugs. He says the Gemara talks about certain bugs that were found in things people were consuming. The bugs are not Asr al pi halach in this case, but it's revolting. And the Gemara still seems to say that if you don't mind, Ravina didn't mind, and he was willing to consume this food. That's fine, because he wasn't revolted by it. Pri Chadash says, certainly, most people, in his estimation, would think these things are gross. Nevertheless, he says, that if it's just a question of Rov, you don't say Balodaito, it depends on your personal feelings. If it's everyone thinks so, and you're just an outlier, then he doesn't define the difference. But then he says, you do say Balodaito. So here, Pri Chadash concedes that even if Rov go one way, but if there's a legitimate subset of people who go the other way, you don't say Balodaito. When it comes to Nechal Kamo Shuchai, though, the Pri Chadash seems to say that any kind of rove, you say Batla Daito. The only time you don't say Batla Daito, he says, in the Hagos Hashri, is in a case where we can't even figure out, which we know there are people who go both ways, we can't even figure out clearly which is which. Then we say, if in your country they it is Nechal Kamo Shuchai, it's not Bishulakim. If in this country it's not Nechal Kamo Shuchai, it is Bishulakim. Pri Chadash seems to take a much more Batla Daito standard here, a much more expansive view of Batla Daito, that any time there's a clear majority, even if there's a substantial number of people who do the other thing, then we say Batla Daito. There are those who disagree with the Pri Chadash, notably the Banei Chai, and the Shevet Halevi is sympathetic to this view. Shevet Halevi is mechavin on his own for the counter-argument, or the Banei Chai himself already said this. They argue, even if we grant that the Brit Kaddish is right, that anywhere in halacha where we need to establish an abstract legalistic definition of set a standard or a definition, you're right. We'll say bala daito. We want to know what is cooking, what is considered edible raw. Anytime we want to establish some kind of general abstract rule, we look at the general custom and we don't look at the individual people who are involved in the case. However, he says, Bishul Akum, they want to argue, is a special case. Bishul Akum, it's not like Hilchas Shabbos. We want to know, is this considered raw or not raw, nechal raw, not nechal raw. Bishul Akum was Gzeir Drabanan. It was for a very specific reason. It was because of Chasnus. We don't want you to get too close to the non-Jews. So there he says, it all depends on whether will or won't be Chasnus. If you personally need it to be cooked, then you'll feel close to someone who cooks it for you. And that's Bishul Akum. If you personally don't need it to be cooked, then you won't feel close to the person who cooked it. Like some Rishonim said, that's why Bishul Akum has a special standard. So they want to argue, these Akronim, that it's not Bishul. There's no issue of Bala Daito because it's simply a question of will there or won't be there be Chasnus. So you know, you can disagree. You can argue that even when Chazal made Gzeiros because of a reason, they still worked with general Klal, like we discussed Lo Plug, we discussed regarding non-Frum Jews, where there's no real issue of Chasnus, but still some poskim say they just made broad rules. Anyone who has the status of a non-Jew in Halacha, you certainly could hear here. Also, that depends on, you know, they set up abstract legal standards of what is Nechuk Mo Shuchai. These Achronim want to argue that it doesn't, that you don't say Bala Daito, because it just depends on the pragmatic and concrete question of whether this will lead to chasness or not, not whether it meets some abstract standard of nechel kmo shuchai in a platonic abstract sense or not. Now, there's another reason that one could challenge the prichadash, and this is based on a ritva. There are actually two different ritvas that are relevant here, but one of them in particular interests me. The Chida, in a couple of his discussions of this topic, brings a ritva in Erevin. The Rishonim, Prichadash himself, rattles off a bunch of cases throughout Shas where we discuss the notion of Bala Daita as a Kaladam, and the Rishonim ask all kinds of stiras. There are some Gemaras that seem to say, at least when we're dealing with an entire region of people, even if they're a miut, we don't say Bala Daito to the rest of the world, or some places that the Gemara seems to say that even an entire region, an entire country, would be Bala Daito to the rest of the world if, as long as they're a miut. So the Rishonim grapple, Tosus, other Rishonim, the Ritva grapple with what is the rule, when do we say, what are the rules, when do we say Bala Daito, when don't we say Bala Daito? So the Ritva, after a pretty lengthy discussion, acknowledging the opinions of earlier Rishonim, concludes as follows. He says there are three facets to the question of Bala Daito. He says, when the minhag is Mishuna, when the custom is objectively bizarre, you know, who decides, who gets to establish what's a normal minhag and what's mishuna, what's not, I don't know, but he says, assuming we can, you know, stipulate that there's such a thing as a minhag mishuna, even if it's an entire region that has this minhag mishuna, then we say bat l'daito for the rest of the world. He says, if the minhag is not mishuna, just most people don't do it, some people do, there's a minority that likes it, other people don't like it, there's nothing mishuna about it, then you don't say bat l'daito, and you say hecha de nog nog, hecha de lo nog lo nog. You say that whoever has this custom, that the custom is valid for them, whoever doesn't have the custom is not valid for them. Third category, he says, in a case where the minhag of the small region is logical and compelling, and the only reason the rest of the world doesn't do it is because their circumstances are different, then we establish the entire minhag for the world based on this miut, because what they're doing is logical and it's not really contradicted by the rest of the world. They just don't have the same opportunity or the same circumstances. But putting that third case aside, the basic chilek between the first two categories of the ritva is, we distinguish between, it's not just a question of numbers, of who does what, it's also a question of some objective assessment of whether a minhag is mishuna or not. We find this idea in other areas of halacha too, in chashan mishpat, when deciding whether a minhag is binding or not. Sometimes poskim will step in and say, this is minhag garua, this is a minhag of gzela, this is a minhag of shtus. They'll say, this minhag has to be ignored, even if it's common. It's, I mean, the minhag is to do things that are, sometimes a minhag is to do things that are corrupt or that are crazy, that don't make sense. But that's what the Ritva is really saying here. I mean, he's not saying it's morally wrong. He's just saying if the minhag is mishuna, then we disregard it, even if it's an entire astra. If the minhag is not mishuna, we say hechad nog nog, hechad lo nog lo nog. So that really pulls out the rug from much of what the Prichadish is saying. According to the Ritva, I mean, I don't know if we pass like this Ritva, but the Chida is pretty interested in it. So he said, according to the Ritva, there's no absolute rule that at any time someone is outnumbered, we automatically follow the row. That's only, at least if it's an entire astra, not when it's a yachid, but at least when it's an entire astra, an entire region, the only time we disregard a widespread custom of an entire region is if we objectively assess if their custom is Mishuna. If it's not Mishuna, then we say Hechad Nog Nog, Hechad Lo Nog Lo Nog. So when the Prichadish was faced with the Hagos Ashri, how can you say that we follow the Astra with oranges or whatever those things were? The answer could very well be, according to the ritual, because that was not Mishuna. Some people had tastes, gastronomic tastes that went this way, and some tastes that went that way. So there's no, the Prichadish seems to be assuming that regardless of, we don't make any assessments of the Minog, it's all Tam Varech, it's all questions of taste, and we follow the Rov, unless there is no clear Rov. While according to the ritual, the Chidah points out, you really have to ask yourself, is the Minog normal and just not less common, or is it abnormal? Again, it's obviously a very knotty and somewhat philosophical question. Who decides what's normal? The people doing it think it's normal, probably, and so you know, what's normal to you is not normal to them, and vice versa. And this takes us kind of into the sushi question we were discussing earlier, where Poskim, last half century or so, we're grappling with whether now that we learned of a place called Japan and they have sushi, and now that we import sushi into the U.S. and we have sushi. So is that something which is considered, so even if we accept that numerically, by sheer numbers, most of the world does not eat raw fish, it may not even be true anymore, but even if that's still true, that most of the 5 billion or so people in the world do not like raw fish, and only a few hundred million or a billion or two like raw fish and eat raw fish. So the question is, according to the Brichadish, it seems, as long as there's a clear rov, you have to disregard the miut, even if it's astra, in favor of the rov. However, according to the Ritva, we have to ask ourselves, is it normal to eat raw fish? Is that normal? I mean, according to the, I don't know how you decide that, I don't know who decides that, but according to the Ritva, if it's a minig mishuna that some countries have this bizarre custom of eating raw fish, then you disregard it, even if it's an astra. But if it's not mishuna, then you say, hechad nog nog, hechad lo nog lo nog. And if it's taka nog, and in the place you are, it's nog to eat raw fish, then one can definitely argue that fish would be considered nechal kemo shuchai and would not be subject to the rules of Bishalakum.